he was like, he's like, is your girlfriend coming to visit? And I was like, yeah, she'll probably come on the weekends. And he's like, cool, just make sure you don't do any like naked sex stuff in the living room because there's like a camera in there. I was like, oh, okay. All right. Thanks, Graham.
So, or was he saying like, if you want to.
Yeah, exactly. If you want the video, if you want the footage.
I can record it and send it to you, but I'm going to have to watch it to be able to record it and send it to you. Hey, what's happening, you guys? And welcome back to the Proclivity Podcast. I am your host, Joel Cochran. I'm here with Emily Rodella as the co-host, and we have a special guest today, Corey Hibben. Not Hibben, Hibben. There's a story to that. Do you want to share that story?
Do you want to hear that story? I'll give you the short version. Please. So my grandpa went to World War II, and when he went to war, they messed up his dog tag such as name. So it used to be spelled with two B's, H-I-B-B-E-N. And ever since he got out of the military, he just never changed it back. He just left it. So it's always technically been pronounced Hibben with two B's. But like if you pronounce it like it's spelt, it's pronounced Hibben, which is incorrect, though, how we actually say it in the family. So, yeah.
So is it like, is it correct the way the family is saying it, or is it correct in like, is it Hibben or Hibben?
It's, that's a family drama dilemma. I'll be honest.
Okay.
I don't think we've solved that mystery.
Yes.
But cause if you look up like, cause my name, if you look up my name, there is no other human on the planet with my name, mostly because my last name is technically quote unquote spelt wrong. You'll find other 2B Hibbens in the world, but like we're a very rare breed of 1B Hibbens in the planet because of that reason exactly. So,
so if I
die, the name goes away forever.
You need to start having children now.
And pass along. And my girlfriend would like to hear you say that, actually. So
yeah. start to reproduce right now.
She's going to be happy to hear that when she listens to this. So please. Thank you for that.
Yep. You just got to pull the goalie. Just got to pull the goalie. See what happens.
I'm not ready, Joel.
Anywho, you look ready to me. You look ready.
Are you kidding me? I don't even have a home. What do you mean I look ready? I'm currently staying at a farm because I don't have a home. What are you talking about?
And this is how we're going to start off of how micro wins really compound and add up in the long run. You guys, what we're going to be talking about today is we're going to be talking about Corey's story. And Corey's story is a unique one, from going from a chubby kid to, if you follow him on Instagram, the guy's running half marathons, running every day, extremely fit, has an extensive background in training, strength training. You did bodybuilding too as well?
Yep.
I mean,
physique shows, a couple of them.
Physique shows. The guy has an extensive background. And so we're going to go through the genealogy of truly creating that change, where the psychology is in making that change, and the physiological change as well. So I'm excited to be able to dive in the story, you guys, and I hope that you can resonate with some of the stuff that Corey's going to say today. And we're going to go down this journey together. So Corey, tell us a little bit about the genealogy of going from a chubby kid to running half marathons and living on a farm.
I love how you put the farm piece in there. So I'm 35 and probably without question in the best shape of my life. But prior to that of growing up as a fat kid, have you ever seen the movie The Goonies?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Chunk from The Goonies?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, man. So he's okay. Well, he's the little fat kid, and like the truffle shuffle is his main cue in that movie. And so he would always like juggle his belly fat. Like that was his thing in the movie.
I remember.
That was 1,000% me. Like I literally posted a side by side photo of me and Chunk from The Goonies, and we look identical. And most people look back at this and they lose their mind, and they're like, there's no way that is you. And it's like, it is for sure me. I think I'm actually holding a fish in this photo, ironically. You can swing back through my Instagram and find it. But I look exactly like this little fat kid from the Goonies. And the reason I think that this is just like a fun conversation is because I think about, you called it micro wins, but I also think about the aspect of people and environments in terms of like how those are the two biggest things that I'm always thinking about is like, who are the people I'm around and what environments am I around as well? Because like those are going to influence your choices. And so like typical American diet of like, I grew up like most Americans, right? Of Pop-Tarts and pizza rolls and snack packs and gummy bears and nothing against anything with any of those foods, but obviously those have a pretty profound impact on your life from a day-to-day experience. And I pretty much grew up living on those foods and not really thinking too much about the health implications of any of this stuff. And honestly, like none of this stuff really changed for me until I luckily grew a little bit into my body, but nothing actually was a pivotal moment until I was actually in high school. And I was in a relationship with a girl that I thought was going to be forever because you're young and dumb and hormonal. And you think like, this is the one and this is going to be the rest of my life because you're an idiot. And she broke up with me. And after that breakup, it spiraled me for sure into the darkest depression I've ever been into in my entire life. And I remember just being like miserable in my parents' basement, super sad and like not in good shape. I wasn't athletic for the most part. I played sports, but I honestly wasn't in that great of shape. It was kind of the skinny fat dilemma like most people deal with. And through that experience, so my mom actually saw how sad I was. And she was going to the local YMCA at the time. And she started inviting me to go to the YMCA. And at that time, I had never really gone to a gym other than whatever you would do in school. I didn't really know how to work out, but I was so sad and miserable and in such a difficult place that I would do anything to feel better. And so I went to the gym with mom and did some lifts, some classic stupid workout stuff of like a bench press and bicep curls or some terrible routine. And after leaving that gym that day, though, I remember just feeling a little better. Like I wasn't cured in any way, shape, or form. I wasn't like happy all of a sudden. Like I was still very depressed, but I just remember feeling a little better. And I was like, that's interesting. And then a few days go by, obnoxiously sore. Like first workout sore, like you did way too much. Like you can't even move your arms. You can't even like wash your hair because you're so unbelievably uncomfortable. And go back to the gym a couple days later because my mom invited me again. And I left the gym that day and felt a little bit better. Did this enough times over the compounding months. And eventually I wasn't sad anymore. Eventually it was like, wow, I actually feel like I still want to be around and I still want to like continue to live my life. And I always look back at that experience of something that it literally hardwired in my brain, the association between feeling good, health, fitness, and general happiness. And I've literally followed that pursuit ever since my entire life. Is like everything I've done pretty much since that point has been in alignment with some sort of physical activity or health or nutrition of some aspect, purely because it's literally hardwired in my brain of like, these things are tied together of, I know when I do these things, I'm just a happier, healthy human. And we can cover a lot of the journey along the way, but that was really like the core pillar of like where all this stuff started.
I can resonate with that. And I know that Emily can as well. It seems like you go back to, and you said this earlier before we started, like changes happen. We either create a change, right? A pivotal change. We're going left. We then go right due to the fact that there was some type of traumatic event, right? That made us go, I have to change. And, or there are the small wins, almost like the neuroplasticity, right? Of the brain shifting over continuous changes. And it sounds like to me that there was a traumatic event, right? You were, the girlfriend broke up, really depressed, scary place in life. There was that trauma event, but then there was starting to be compounding micro wins that, I mean, this was what, when you were 18?
Yeah, 17, 18.
And now you're 35 in the best shape of your life. Do you feel that you had to have that traumatic change first and foremost, and then be able to create those compounding micro wins?
It's funny you say that. I've actually had this exact same conversation with a buddy of mine on my podcast show as well, of like, I sort of do, honestly, like, in a lot of cases, I think that we need some sort of catalyst. And it doesn't have to be life-changing or traumatic, or like people think about like car accidents or like a loss of a loved one. Like those can be those moments, but it could also be as something as straightforward as like a certain conversation or somebody says something to you. Is like, mm-hmm. I think we often need that like line in the sand moment. It doesn't have to be an extreme moment, but I think in a lot of ways, like we do. And I would argue too, though, if like, I think there's a baseline for most people, and you need to experience the depths of certain things to be able to kind of like move that baseline. Mm-hmm. I think the other analogy I like to use is just like the aspect of a pendulum swing, right? Is like, so often you see, you can swing really, really hard into a dark place, which then ultimately swings you really, really hard into a bright place, right? Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know, a part of me feels like you do, maybe not, but like I've had this conversation as well. And I think more often than not, the people that I've talked to have had, yeah, some line in the sand moment, regardless of like how extreme that moment actually is, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we talk about it in the proclivity of like the bigger the constriction, the bigger the expansion, you know, and almost to your analogy of like a pendulum is that when we feel something that's intense, depression, a huge breakup, a loss of a job, a loss of a life, there's going to come a ton of constriction, not understanding, you know, the loss of life, not understanding the loss of the job. And we go into a place of seeking. We're forced. And that the bigger the constriction I have found, the bigger the result. I mean, if we bring up Emily's story of the constriction that she felt, all the things that she was going through, and now she owns a business helping others with nutrition. Emily, do you think that if you didn't have that constriction, you'd be doing what you're doing now?
No, definitely not. And it's funny you say that, because yeah, it can be that act of the car accident or the loved one dying or the diagnosis of something. But the way I look at it, going back to the micro wins, for me, it was the micro like chips at my soul in body, literally. So it was like little things building up over time that finally, like the last diagnosis or the last thing that was like, this hurts, right? Or this is painful. That's what like tipped me over, be like, no, this needs to change and no one else is going to do it for me. And so I look at it as those micro pain points that just added up. And so we ask this question a lot of our clients. It's like, well, what was the moment that made you want to sign up for our program or talk to us or make a change in general? It doesn't have to be us, right? And oftentimes it's like, oh, well, it was when, like, kind of like you said, like, oh, I had that conversation with that person and it changed my perspective and made me realize like, I need to change or else nothing's going to change, mm-hmm. right? Or looking at the future of like, hey, well, in 10 years from now, if I don't make a change, what's going to happen? And that's a big one for people to think about, right? So I don't know if you were thinking about that back at 17, 18, but right, these are all different kinds of ways that people make change, I've found.
Yeah. And I would also say too, of I've more or less learned this recently, which I think could be a big takeaway for a lot of people too, is that the act of signing up for the thing or committing to the thing, I think that is so vastly underestimated. It's unbelievable. Of like even the most recent stuff of this whole half marathon thing that I did recently, which it literally only started because like I knew the power of just like signing up and committing to doing the thing. And so the second tickets went on sale to sign up for this marathon, I actually wanted to do the full. I wasn't able to do the full, which was a whole other story. But like I signed up and like it just started the micro wings behind it, right? Is like I signed up, I'm gonna do this race, hell or high water. And then I started having to do behaviors that were in line with like, okay, I signed up, I'm gonna do this thing. And then I started making actions towards that direction, this thing that I signed up for. And I think that's so vastly underestimated, is because like now looking back at this was only maybe, I don't know, 4 months ago now maybe. And now I'm like looking at doing an ultra marathon at some point, or doing the Leadville 100, which is like the Super Bowl of ultra running, right? But prior to me signing up to that thing, I hated running. I never wanted to run. I thought running was the dumbest thing ever. I've always had a background in like weight training and bodybuilding and looking good naked. And that was always like my goal and my emphasis. And now I've like slowly started to shift into this human of like, even the word athlete is so funny to me. I've never really considered myself quote unquote an athlete, But then all these things that I've been doing lately are in line with that, from like the half marathon to doing ultras to wanting to do high rocks. And everyone's like, they started using that word behind my name of like, Corey's an athlete of whatever form. And it was like, none of that happened if I hadn't just like signed up for the thing. I was like, all right, I'm going to send it. Can we swear on this podcast, by the way? But I was like, I was like, whatever, fuck it. I'm going to send it. I'm going to try to do this marathon. And like, just the act of signing up and all the micro things that came behind that, of like how I ate and how I slept. And now I have a Garmin on, and it's like all these like silly things that like add up to where I'm at today. So.
Yeah. And I love that you brought this up, because I just did a presentation on identity and reality, where it's, do we need to have the identity to create the reality, or does the reality create the identity, right? It's almost the chicken before the egg kind of thing. Did I need to sign up and go, okay, I've signed up. Now I'm a runner. Like, I'm going to run. And as soon as we made the switch of like, I'm a runner now, because beforehand, the identity was running stupid. I'm not a runner, right? I lift heavy weights. Identity. So the reality is then, I'm lifting heavy weights, right? I'm not running. Yet you took the step, which is, I totally agree with you. Taking the step, again, you're going to butt up to constriction. I don't know if I should do this. I've never ran before, right? But on the other side is expansion. By signing up, an identity shift happened of like, well, I'm running now. I'm going to be a runner. And now there's videos of you running all the time, right? You're, if you guys don't follow Corey on Instagram, follow him on Instagram. He got his shirt off. He's all tan, running through Austin, looking great. Okay. And you're like talking and running at the same time. What an incredible shift from the reality of lifting weights to the reality of running. Yet there had to be an underlying identity shift that happened. And this is why language is so important to us at Proclivity, because if your words are saying, I'm not a runner, you won't be a runner. You don't identify with being a runner. You don't identify with a runner. You're not going to run. And so I'm curious on your take with that, because it's something that's been mulling around in my head in terms of like, do you need to have the identity to create the reality, or does it, I have to make the $100,000 or the $1 million to be a successful business owner. Now I can call myself a successful business owner instead of saying, I'm a successful business owner. I'm a $1 million business owner. And then I make the $1 million.
So two things. One, I am obsessed with the aspect of identity, because identity drives behavior. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And the other aspect of that as well is that I think it's gray. Unfortunately, we live in a gray world. We want to live in a black and white world of right, wrong, yes, right. This is good. This is bad. But honestly, unfortunately, everything is on a spectrum. Literally everything is on a spectrum. And knowing that we live in a gray world, I think it's an aspect of both. Because if I was to reflect specifically on that experience alone of signing up for the marathon, there was no identity of being a runner. I had no history with it. I had never checked the box of running. I didn't even know that there was a skill to running, which is another topic even in of itself, of like, the second you get into something, anything, it could be, I don't know, carpentry or a chair or a table or whatever, insects, is like, the second you get into it, you realize how much you don't know, right? And that was running for me. It was like, oh yeah, you just like put shoes on and you hit the trail. Wrong. Like, there is way more to it than I ever even imagined. And so I think prior to that, though, like, I had no experience. I had never really done it. I'd never checked the box of like, quote unquote, identity. I'm a runner. And so signing up for me, it was like, there was no identity experience there. But then to the topic of this entire conversation of like the micro wins along the way, right? And like, don't get me wrong, there were many moments where I wanted to quit and I wanted to give up. And I had the worst IT pain on both of my knees when I first started getting into it, thinking there was no way I was ever going to be able to do this thing. And so there were dips and valleys that I went through in this like building of an identity of a runner. And now looking back at it 4 months later of like when I started this journey, is like, I can for sure say there's an identity to it now. Of like, you even mentioned it, of the content that I post, and like, it's almost become a routine for me now to go on a run and hold up my camera and record myself talking about something that's probably irrelevant. But like, it's now there's an identity shift that happens, right? And so I think it's both. But I think for anybody listening, I would say that the most important part of it, the entire piece of it, though, is like, to your point of, one is like taking that first step, but then also to allowing yourself to experience like the good feelings of those victories, right? It's like, I remember the very first time I ever went out on a run. It was like, I made sure that it was like so micro that I knew that I could, it was like a mile run. It was like, I could do a mile. Like anybody could do a mile. And so it was like so micro that I could guarantee myself a victory so that I felt good about the experience of running versus like going out and trying to do 5 miles and getting frustrated and wanting to quit early on. And so mm-hmm. I think it's gray if that answers your question.
I agree. I agree with you. From it continuing, I know it's gray because I've been thinking about this for a while and I've been bouncing back and forth. And usually if it's bouncing back and forth that much, I'm like, it depends, right? Famous Emily words, like, It truly depends. And I believe that we can leverage both. We can leverage the action to continue to build the identity. And I believe that we can sit down and visualize and create the identity to then create the action to take the step. Because there had to be at some point, Corey, that you saw yourself running to sign up for the half marathon. Even if it was a blimp, one moment, seeing yourself across the line or being envisioned of like the big bodybuilder, right? Getting across the line. There had to be some type of moment to give a flicker to go, I'll sign up for this. And then the action really started pushing the identity. And so, you know, for anybody that's listening, coming back to those micro wins, being able to allow yourself to have wins is step number one, because so much, it could have been so easy for you, Corey, to run the 1 mile and say that wasn't enough. And so all of a sudden it wasn't a win, it was a loss. And to be able to give yourself that space to be able to go, cool, I got up, I went with mom, I did some bicep curls. That felt good. That is allowing yourself to feel the win. And yet there's so many people that won't allow themselves to feel that win. Why do you think that people struggle with being able to celebrate even micro wins? It's almost like unless it's like the finish line pinnacle, they're not willing to celebrate, right? It has to be the very end. I did the thing. I did the 75 days hard exactly as prescribed. Now I can celebrate. But not being able to celebrate that I signed up for a half marathon. What do you think that is?
So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the expression of the gap versus the gain. So I think that is at the core of exactly what you're talking about, is that as humans, one of the blessings and the curses of being a human is that we have the opportunity to be able to think and plan ahead, which means that we spend a lot of time doing that, which means that we spend a lot of time projecting what we hope or want our future to look like, right? That's the gap. I'm here. I want to be somewhere else. I'm going to spend all my time ruminating on that experience versus being here in the moment, right? That's most of human nature. The gain is being able to take the moments to stop and look back at how far you've come, which is way harder for most people, I would say, is that I bet you anybody, I know for sure both of you, but really anybody that's listening to the show could look back at themselves a while ago and been like, man, look how far I've come in whatever, name your thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that is at the core of exactly what you're talking about, is like why we struggle so much with being able to take a moment to appreciate the wins that we're experiencing, because we're always looking for that next thing and we're always planning ahead, which like I want to give people grace as well. Is like, that's one of the amazing things about being a human. Like you mentioned that I'm on a farm. The goats out there are not planning ahead. They're eating the hay in front of them in the moment and they're happy as could fucking be. Unfortunately, humans don't have that nature, right? Mm. Is like, which is why we are the dominant species on this planet, is because we can do that. But with that comes the aspect of like a little bit of pain and discomfort, because we are always like, oh man, I wish I could be here, as opposed to being like, man, look how far I've come. And so like, I think it's just important. Not that you don't need both, right? Is like, don't get me wrong. I spend a lot of my time thinking and planning ahead, but I have to be very intentional to pause and step back and go like, but damn, like, look how far I've come prior to, right? Like, I mean, even as something as basic as this topic of what we're talking about of running is the idea of doing an ultra or a Leadville 100 sounds super cool. And I look forward to doing it, but I'm not going to take away from the fact that, like, prior to the half marathon, I never run more than 2 miles in my entire life. Like, why can't I just appreciate that as well?
I love that. Talking about this is an interesting, because we have a client who has made incredible progress physically, psychologically, has gotten through a lot of different challenges and barriers. And there's times where she comes back to the repetition of, I can't believe that I'm able to do what I'm doing now. I can't believe that I'm here now. I can't believe. And my big thing is, like, believe it because you're here. And there's almost like this, like, identity crisis of, like, I can't be into this. Like, I can't be this person. Yet I'm looking to the back of where I was and how stuck I was and how hard it was. And there's almost this, like, in between spot that they're getting stuck at. Have you ever been there before or heard anybody that said, like, I can't believe that I'm here now?
Yeah. I mean, even when I think about my own life, right, is like being home free on a farm with a bunch of animals. And when I say home free, most people would call it homeless, but I call it home free because I like not having an actual residence at this moment of my life. So I can even reflect on my own life of, yeah, having many experiences of being like, man, how did I get here? And I think it just ties so nicely into the gray area and the micro wins that come from stuff like that. I mean, if you want to talk from like a health standpoint of, I mean, I've tried a lot of different diets, from the keto to paleo to now the more recently of doing just a lot more meat and fruit. And it's so funny to be able to be in those places in your life and to reflect back of like, man, I used to eat a lot of Pop-Tarts and pizza rolls. And again, nothing wrong with any of those foods. But then it's like you reflect on it and you're like, damn, how did I get here? And it always comes back to those two things of like how we started this conversation is like people and environments, I feel like, are the biggest things that have always like influenced those choices in my life. It's like I can literally go back to every chapter of my life and almost without question was a direct reflection of the people and environments when I was around. Like, if you look back at photos of me from when I was in college, I drank a lot and I partied a lot. And if you look at photos, I was weight training. I was quote unquote trying to eat healthy, although I was on a college diet. So I was eating a lot of like mac and cheese and tuna, which is delicious together if you've ever done that. But so like looking at that dietary and lifestyle choices is like, that was a reflection of exactly what I looked like, right? I looked like I sort of hit the gym once in a while, but at the same time had a little bit of what would call skinny fat, right? From all the drinking and not sleeping and partying and everything that came with it. And so like, there's so much to be said, even just those topics alone of like being very conscious of the people and environments that you're around and how those impact your life. And I think that's a big aspect of being for sure in the best shape of my life I am now is like the people and the environments that I'm in now is like, yeah, people look to me and they're like, cool, you're super fit and you're in great shape and you're running on the beach and everything. But like, if you look at the people that I surround myself with, every one of my friends has a 6 or an 8 pack. It's like clearly there's like a overlap here, right? Is like, so I think that's really important to be aware of as well is like, where you're spending your time and energy and like who those people are is for sure going to affect your life for better or for worse.
Totally. And did you notice yourself? So, because I thought of that immediately when you said, oh, my mom invited me to the gym. That was a pivotal moment of like, oh, I wonder what you would do if you didn't have that opportunity. And so, but moving forward after that, did you think about that when you were 17, 18, moving into college or even after college? Like, have you continued to think about that or when did that start for you?
So at that time, I often make the joke that I don't know that as a male, I'm speaking from a male experience, I don't know that I ever had a real good conscious decision until I was like 27. I feel like most of my choices from like teens to 20s as a male is just like I'm trying to pick up chicks and look good naked was the majority of motivating factors for me for the majority of my life, I would say. And so it wasn't until like I actually wanted to perform at a level for certain events that I was actually competing in before like actual more conscious decision was being made of like, wanting to just do well in life and to be able to be active and to be able to hang out with certain people. And so like, it's hard to know of like, yeah, if my mom hadn't invited me to the gym, I think about that all the time of it literally could have been anything. It could have been in that moment. It could have been a friend that was like, hey, smoke this weed. Or it could have been like, hey, try this drink of alcohol. Or it could have been like, hey, come to this cult. We're going to drink some Kool-Aid. Like, it literally could have been anything. Like, I'm very blessed and lucky that it was my mother who wanted to invite me to the gym and like be that outlet for like how sad I was in that moment. But, and yeah, it's just the aspect of people and environments, right? Is like, thank God it was my mother who was actually going to the gym at the time and it gave me a healthy outlet to do it. And so for anyone listening is like, for sure, be conscious and be aware of where you're putting your time and energy and who you're around, because like, it will affect your life. No question. I mean, the most cliche statement of all time is like, you're the average of five people you spend the most time with. It's a fact. It's literally a fact. There's no getting around it. And so like, be very conscious of it.
Yes. I love it. I love it. So I want to do this. I want you to imagine, Corey, that there's somebody who was in your shoes or is in your shoes right now, where they're feeling like they had a traumatic event or they're feeling like they can't get up. What would be your suggestion in terms of starting to build some micro wins?
Floss one tooth. So I'm sure you're familiar with that expression. So a lot of this is from the ideas and philosophies of BJ Fogg. If anyone's not familiar with BJ Fogg, he's pretty much the guy behind why social media is as addictive as it is that he just understands human behavior at a very, very high level. And he wrote a phenomenal book. It's called Tiny Habits. Really great read. And the phrase that so often comes to my mind, which I think people underestimate, is we change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad. Is so often we punish ourselves for the things we didn't do, when in reality, real change happens by feeling good about the things that you did do. Mm-hmm. And so I was sort of joking, sort of not joking about flossing one foot or one tooth, one foot.
Man,
can you imagine flossing a foot? Yeah.
Yeah, I can. I instantly thought
maybe
like,
that's the win. If that makes you laugh, I mean, floss one foot. I mean, maybe that's the...
Yep.
But, but I think the point is like, you have to, whatever it is you want to do in life, whether it's eating healthy, being a little bit more active, posting on social media, starting a business, getting a relationship, like whatever your endeavors are, is think about that thing that you want in your life. Let's say that's, for example, of this conversation, let's say it is running. Set the goal so micro and so small that you guarantee yourself a win and then celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's literally the basis of every habit, is like set the goal so small and then celebrate the victory. And so like it literally could be putting on your shoes. That's it. That's the goal. Put on your running shoes. Don't even have to go on a run. If you decide you want to, cool. If you want to go on a walk, awesome. But you don't have to. If the goal is putting on your shoes and then you celebrate that and then come back the next day and go, all right, let's put on my shoes again. I promise you at some point you're going to be like, all right, my shoes are on. I might as well go on a walk, right? Like the goal has to be so tiny and so small that you guarantee yourself a victory and feel good about it, because then you're going to continue to do it. The mistake 99.9% of people make is they set these audacious goals, which are fine, but that can't be the day-to-day. The day-to-day has to be micro. It has to be so small. I mean, even if I'm even looking at me now, like you said, I'm into running, I'm very fit, whatever, that's all cool. But like even now today, that was, I think people need to remember, that was like a 15-year journey, like to where I'm at today, like 15 years. Like there's like what I'm at today is not even remotely close to what I was 15 years ago. And it was all micro habits that stack on top of each other. And they're just tiny wins that lead up along the way. So like floss one foot. That's my advice.
Gotta floss that one foot, you guys. It's interesting in our society, and this is how we built the proclivity method, because with our experience, Emily and I's experience, we saw like it was like an all in or all out kind of thing. You know, talking about the black and white and zero gray. What's the best way to be able to celebrate? So I put on my shoes. Is it looking in the mirror and saying like, hell yeah, you did it? Is it journaling? Is it posting something on Instagram? I mean, what have you done? What have you seen other people do to be able to celebrate? Because what does that mean? You know, like, yeah, you put on the shoes, but how? I'm curious, right, Corey, because a lot of people struggle to celebrate. They don't have the repetition. They don't understand it. So how would you suggest somebody being able to celebrate that?
So if your favorite sports team won the whatever Super Bowl or World Cup or I don't know, whatever you're going to do, like think about your favorite sport team, whatever they are. And then what would you do? Show me, Joel. Like if you're like, who's your favorite team?
Proclivity.
What? Okay. So if Proclivity became the world's biggest nutrition company,
yes.
What would you do? How would you feel? What would be your reaction?
My reaction would be two hands in the air.
Okay.
Like this. Best day ever. Yes.
There it is. There it is. That's what you do. So it sounds silly, but there's an expression for it. I think it's called shine moments. But essentially you just think about like, yeah, if you won the Super Bowl or like you won the World Series, like what did you do? Like, what would you do with your body? Like, how would you feel? Like, what's the emotions that would come up? Like, what would you do with your arms and your head and your eyes? Like, would you stand up? Like, would you pull your shoulders, but like fist pump, like whatever it is like, do that at the end of whatever it is you're trying to experience. Right. So like, if you did that, you put on your shoes, celebrate that shit. Like, you just fucking technically sort of won the Super Bowl for yourself in that moment, right? And so like, that is the easiest way. It's gonna feel weird, it's gonna feel awkward, you're gonna feel like an idiot, but the funny thing is like, your brain doesn't know the difference. Your brain's gonna be like, oh, okay, there's some association here with like something good happened, maybe I should do this again on another day. And so it sounds silly, but honestly it works.
I totally agree. You're right, that neuroplasticity is that change in the brain by being able to have that continuous reward or response. And so, Emily, I'm actually curious, because I believe this is a good correlation as well, is how do you celebrate your son?
How do I celebrate my son?
He takes a poop. What do you do for the first time? He pooped in the pot.
In the toilet. Not in the bathtub. What do you, yes. Like, it's got to be different. Those are different celebrations.
What did you do when Dansby, where you're like, that was okay?
Subpar, but it'll do. No, I look him in the eye and I'm like, man, look what you did. That's awesome. Like, good for you. And so I'd be present with him. And so I imagine that being the same with myself, of being present and taking a moment to think about it. Like, wow, that's great. And like Corey said, looking back, like, yesterday I wasn't doing that. Today I did that. Whoa.
Right? Isn't it so interesting, you guys, that for little kids, if they literally open their hands and close their hands and they copy what we do, we're just like, yay. Uh-huh. Right? But we can't do that the same. Exactly what Corey's saying. We can't tie our shoes and go, yes, good job. We did it. Yay. Why? Would you rather feel positive about yourself regardless of what it is, that you ran an ultra or you put on the shoes? What's the difference between the two if we celebrate it the same? I know people who ran ultras who were so sad after because they didn't run the pace they thought they were going to run. And I know people who went and walked and came back with the smile, biggest smile on their face, like, I did it. I did it. And I go, hell yeah, you did. Who really won? The person who ran the ultra marathon and came back sad because they didn't run the pace they thought they should run? Or the person who walked around the block and came back with the hugest smile on their face? I want to be the person who walked around the block with the hugest smile on my face. This is how you make the best day ever.
I feel like I'd be like a high five dad. I feel like if... I'm just thinking about you, Emily, in terms of if my kid did something like that, I'd totally be the high five dad. I'd be like, fuck yeah. Oh, high five. Yeah. Let's go.
We do lots of high fives. It's great.
After he washes so his fun. Hands, of course.
Yeah. No, well, I give wipe me all him. The dirty.
After you wash your hands. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Cool. Oh my gosh, this is so good. This is so good. This is. Go ahead.
I was going to just say, to your point about that of like celebrating the wins and like why the ultra marathoner can't celebrate and why the person that can actually just put on their shoes can celebrate it. I think that is a really honestly important point just to make note of just the a quote that often comes to mind for me is nothing is good nor bad. It's thinking that makes it so. And I think so often in that scenario, it's just perspective issues, right? It's like people lack perspective. And nothing against, and this could be honestly a whole conversation of itself. And I think that's something most Americans in general struggle with, which is one of the reasons that I just love travel in general, is because I think we lack perspective. Most Americans do at the end of the day, honestly. It's like we live in a pretty amazing place, in a pretty amazing country with amazing people and amazing opportunity. And most people are like, oh, my Netflix is loading slow, or like the Amazon delivery took 2 days instead of 1 day. And it's like, fucking kidding me? Like perspective is just, it's so important. So yeah.
Yeah. We say a quote in the Proclivity Method. There are a million people praying for your problems. A million people praying for your problems. And we do it when we walk people through what's called pressure language. We tend to say, I need to, I have to, right? I got to. And when we switch them to say, you get to, right? I have to go to work. You get to go to work. You get the opportunity to go to work, because there's a million people wishing they could have your job, to be able to have the money to have your house, to be out of a safe place for them to be able to go to sleep, without thinking that they're going to be attacked or their life is in danger. You get to. And when we start stepping back and going, man, I do have a roof over my head. And we start counting the micro wins, the smallest of wins, right? It's why I wake up every single morning and I touch my fingernails and my face and my nose, because I know there's, the other day I was walking back from getting lunch down in Midtown, and I turn the corner, there's this guy in this wheelchair, homeless guy, and it was a nightmare scene. This dude, whether he chewed off his own nose, I don't know how that's possible, or somebody else did, he'd only had the bone, no cartilage, right?
Whoa.
And his one eye was like gouged out. I mean, some like real, like, whoa, kind of situation. So then you see something like that and you go, holy crap, I have a nose. Whether it's a big nose or skinny nose or wide nose or whatever. Like, dude, you got a nose. This guy, whatever happened to him, whatever his situation, he has one eye and half a nose. You got two eyes and a nose. The more that we can count the micro wins, the micro blessings that we have, the big ones are just like, oh, great. But we tend to forget about the micro ones because we're only focused on the big one. And then we miss out on that perspective, exactly what you're talking about.
A really simple practice that I've adopted as well, it's called, what did I call it? Training for Life or something like that? I don't remember. I put a name for it. But essentially what it is every evening I write down three things that are unique to my day that I appreciated that are different than every other day. And I think what's really important about this practice for me is that I've done the gratitude journaling in the past, and I think a lot of people have tried it. That always lasted for a bit, and then you just find yourself repeating the same things. And it's like, I'm grateful for my health and my family, which is fine. Those are great. But honestly, like, it really felt like it lost its oomph, right? At some point, it just became like you're doing it for the sake of doing it versus like actually feeling like it was improving my life. Mm-hmm. And that's why I adopted that new philosophy of like at the end of every single day, I rather write down or reflect on three things that are unique about that day that I appreciated that are different than every single day. And it's that neuroplasticity that you're talking about before, is that it forces my brain to find things in my life that I appreciated that are unique, because there is something every single day that is different than every other day that you can find that you appreciate it. There's no question. There's absolutely no question. And so it's been a really good practice for me, for anybody, just like as a practical experience of like how to find more real life scenarios that, yeah, there are good things in this day that are worth taking note of.
I love that.
I like
that. I'm going to start incorporating that. Yep. Thank you for the inspiration, Corey. Trademark that. All right. I want to wrap this up. And what we usually do at the end of each podcast is we give...
We take our shirts off.
Well, our pants are off, all three of us.
I didn't know. Sorry, I jumped the gun there.
I wasn't sure. Remember, there's you're being recorded back there. So it is. And you're being recorded here too. What are three things, tangible things, that we can give to our listeners to help them to start creating those micro wins or micro changes? We've talked about a bunch of different ones here. You've given a ton of great information. Yet what would be the top three things for them to take away?
So are you looking for overarching principles, or are you looking for something specific to like health, nutrition, fitness? Tangible.
Just tangible things that people can do in terms of being able to start creating those micro wins. Maybe it's nutrition. Maybe it's health, lifestyle. What are those micro wins? What are some things that they could get going and get doing?
Okay. So let's I'm going to try to ping these towards nutrition the best that I can for the sake of the show. So at the top of the list is kind of like to my original point about the people and environmental thing. And so I have found one of the easiest and most impactful, literally the easiest and the most impactful, biggest bang for your buck that you can literally do in terms of a micro win for anyone from just a healthy nutritional living standpoint is increase the friction from the things that you don't want to do and reduce the friction from the things you do want to do. And so what I mean by that is like, let's think food, let's think groceries. If the food is not in your house, you're way less likely to eat it or engage with it because like it's not there. And then you just would have to go to the store and climb all these hurdles essentially to be able to eat the food. And so like from a very massive impact to something that I found in my own life is like when I have just the right foods in my home and I have the wrong foods not in my home, that is the easiest micro win of all time that leads to a billion other micro wins throughout the course of like weeks, months, years, and a lifetime. So that'd be number one, is like literally make sure that the things that you want to eat are in the house and things you don't want to eat are not in the house. That's number one. The second one I would say too is like from a more of a fitness standpoint is that choose the outlet that you enjoy, because if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to do it, right? And so people try to sign up or do the thing or the event that they actually don't really enjoy and they don't really actually want to do. And so then you feel crappy when you don't do it, and then you just spiral down the micro loss hole of like, oh, I feel bad and I didn't do it and I didn't show up and I didn't go to this class or whatever it is. And so like for sure, from a very base standpoint of like choose the outlet that you enjoy. For some people it's rock climbing, for some people it's walking, for some people it's ping pong, I don't know, whatever your thing is, right? Is like choose the thing that you actually enjoy doing from a micro level, and that again will lead to more consistently showing up to doing the thing. And the last one that I would say too would be, I follow this rule, and it's, I don't know how much it'll resonate with people, but I just want to tell people in general because I think it might be helpful for somebody out there. And I kind of have this like really weird rule around nutrition of I eat when I'm hungry and I don't when I'm not. And it sounds so simple, but it honestly, it's one of the most effective just eating habits principles that I've ever adopted in my life, is that I think that we were sold very hard from just the marketing corporate world in general of this idea of three meals a day with snacks in between and breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Those are all literally just marketing terms. Those are all literally just ways to sell more food and products to the general world and the economy. And so like when you pull back from what the corporate societal world is trying to do of trying to sell you more things for you to buy, and realize of like, if you just stopped listening to that and you actually just started listening to your body of like, I'm hungry now and I'm not at this moment, and that's totally fine, is like you'd be way more successful in just your general health journey of just paying attention to you versus paying attention to like, this is my schedule, this is my routine, it's breakfast, I need to breakfast, it's lunch, I need lunch. It's like, no, like, are you hungry? Cool, eat. If you're not, great, don't. And like, that'll serve you so much better than trying to follow this like routine of like when you should or shouldn't eat.
Emily, what do you think?
I like it because it poses the it initiates the question, how am I feeling? Which most people don't stop to do. So I love it.
You got the golden seal, Corey. That doesn't happen too often from Emily. You got to wear that badge with pride.
High five.
Bam. Awesome. Well, Corey, this has been an incredible conversation. Micro wins and so many different, you know, channels that we went down. If people are interested in getting to know you more, how do they get in contact with you?
CoreyHi.com, CoreyHi.com. You pretty much find everything there, from my social to my podcast to everything. So
incredible podcaster, you guys. If you like our show, go and listen to Corey's podcast. Corey, your podcast.
Joel was on it.
I was on it. It was a fantastic time, and we laughed our asses off. What's your podcast name?
It was actually, it's called The Health Hustle. And so it was actually Joel and I's episode. It was actually performed one of the highest performing episodes we've ever done. So if you like Joel, even a little, even if you don't like Joel, for sure, if you don't like Joel, you should go check it out, because then you'll find some dirty little secrets about him. And then you can just like DM him and be like, you suck at this
thing. That's true.
And
so, yeah, there was some dirty secrets. It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for being on the show. Anything else from your side?
Yeah, one last thing. If you are in Austin, Texas, I'd love to connect with you. Build a lot of community here in town, and I love this place and I love this community. So like, if you're here or if you know anybody here, I'd love to meet him. I love building community in this town. So that'd be sweet.
Even though he's out on a farm right now, not in Austin, but that's okay.
West Emily? Austin. Okay.
Emily, anything else?
No, thank you so much for taking time today. It's our pleasure.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
There you go, guys. Episode 116 is in the books. Thank you so much for being able to show up. And until we meet again, Emily.
Best day ever.
Corey.
Best day ever?
No doubt. Or big dick energy. And that's it. That's a wrap.